Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's a birthday you're likely to miss if you're not listening to this program. 300 years ago today, the moralist, the humorist, the travel writer, the linguist Samuel Johnson was born. Joining us to celebrate that birthday is Randy Cohen, who writes The Ethicist for the New York Times. He also writes Moral of the Story blog on nytimes.com. Randy, good morning and happy Johnson Day.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you've reserved a good spot for the big parade.
Yeah, I mean, there will be no big parade. And I guess that's something of a sad commentary on how different we all are from the days of Samuel Johnson. But you're a lover of Johnson. And I actually had to go back to my personal library and pull out the few books I have. Johnson's Dictionary is on my shelf. And, of course, Boswell's famous Life of Johnson, which is one of the most famous biographies of all time. First of all, what do you love about Samuel Johnson and 300 years ago? Very different time from today.
He's certainly the moral thinker that most affects the way I do my job. But it's beyond that. It's that Johnson's enormous capacity for life makes him so endearing. He at once has an enormously bleak view of life. He said, life is a progress from want to want, not from enjoyment to enjoyment. He saw life in the darkest way, and yet he was the most sociable of men. He wrote, I look upon every day to be lost in which I do not make a new acquaintance. It's that combination of the dark and the light, the bleak and the joyful, and his ability to see so deeply into the human heart that just endears him to us all.
Yet it also, and other people have commented on this, in looking at Johnson's work, how he's like so happy and effusive on one level and so dark and depressed on another. He's almost, a kind of Woody Allen of the 1700s, almost bipolar.
He has a very, very bleak view of life, and yet a tremendous enjoyment of humanity, and the most so enormously sociable. There's nothing Johnson enjoyed more than the company and the conversation of other men, and to do this maybe as an escape from the despair that surrounded him, he organized something called the club, and they got together for conversation, and it was the most brilliant minds of this brilliant 18th century age. It was the actor David Garrick, the writer Oliver Goldsmith, the painter Joshua Reynolds. These guys just hung out, drank, and had conversation. It was wonderful.
And he was a great insulter. Samuel Johnson was.
Yes.
Right? There's actually books
Boswell
of his insults.
Accused Johnson of arguing for victory. It didn't so much matter to Johnson what he really thought, Boswell said, as that he crushed his opponent. There was a time he got into a literary dispute with a writer named James McPherson, who was a generation younger than Dr. Johnson. And McPherson threatened to come over and beat him up. And this is when Johnson is quite late in his life. And Johnson refused to be intimidated, and he took an ad out in the paper. He wrote a letter to the paper, and he wrote, I shall never be deterred from detecting what I think a cheat by the menaces of a ruffian. And then he got himself a big cudgel and kept it by his desk because he thought McPherson might break into his house and try to beat him up.
Do you know the definition of the word infausting?
I don't.
All right. It's actually in the Samuel Johnson Dictionary. You can actually find abridgments of that dictionary in paperback today. But here is a typical definition. So conversational, so like speaking straight at you. Infausting. The act of making unlucky. An odd and inelegant word. He actually judges the word in addition to giving the definition.
Is an amazing accomplishment. You know, it was the first real dictionary in the English language, and for many of the words, he would find a quotation somewhere where the word first appeared in print, and he did this all by himself. It took him 10 years. He had some clerks to help him, but he essentially did this as a one-man operation, while at the same time, the French had a vast committee working on the equivalent in their language, and it took them a generation. He doesn't spare himself either from this. He defines defines, I have my copy here, and he defines lexicographer in the dictionary, a writer of dictionaries, a harmless drudge that busies himself in tracing the origin and detailing the significance of words.
A harmless drudge, yes, indeed. And this is from Boswell's Life of Samuel Johnson, which is sort of a good point to end on. And now I am arrived at the last year of the life of Samuel Johnson, a year in which, although passed in severe indisposition, he nevertheless gave many evidences of the continuance of those wondrous powers of mind which raised him so high in the intellectual world. His conversation and his letters of this year were in no respect inferior to those of former years. How about 300 years on? How's Samuel Johnson doing?
Unbelievably well. He's still, I believe, the most quoted writer in the English language after Shakespeare, and we often quote him without knowing it. Patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. That's Dr. Johnson. About second marriage, he said, it's the triumph of hope over experience. He's brilliant. He's tender. He sees deeply into the human heart.
Wow. That's quite a Johnson you've got there, Randy Cohen. He writes The Ethicist for the New York Times Magazine. He also writes Moral of the Story blog on nytimes.com. Happy Johnson Day, Randy.
Thank you, John.
All right. That's our show for this hour. Looking back on the week, you really got talking about Joe Wilson and why the controversy isn't going away. You can talk to us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. Tell us, like John did, that he's sick of it. The controversy isn't going away on The Takeaway precisely because you've decided to milk it to the last drop. All right. Fine. Fine. We take the point. I'm solo today, by the way, on the program. But starting next Monday, folks, drum roll, please. I'll be joined by Celeste Headlee, my new co-host. You may remember she joined me a few weeks back.
But if you end up with a health care plan that does not include the public option, will you break with the president?
She's a veteran radio journalist, and if you listen to her fill-ins, you already know she's an operatic soprano. She'll be joining the show on Monday. Stay tuned for that. I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.